Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 83.
And if this is your first time joining us, welcome.
Welcome.
So this past weekend was my birthday, and I would like to say thank you to everybody that wished me a happy birthday on the Book of Faces and Twitch and all the other places that of people that know us knew when it was and all that good stuff.
Yeah. You're so old now.
Yep. Where I'm getting how old I am. But I am kind of, this week's episode is, it's a David episode, and I did go with something along birthday stuff like I did with yours.
Mm-hmm.
How I did a popular toy that we grew up with. I did the same thing this week. They kind of bring some happiness in from, you know, all of a little bit of the darkness we've been doing quite a bit lately.
The doom and gloom.
Yep. And Lugosi is rubbing on microphones. But we had deep dish pizza for my birthday,
because
what we do for birthdays is we don't buy gifts, we do dinner and a movie. But I decided I don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah,
we ordered in some deep dish pizza, and we watched All Hallows Eve, Amazon Prime, and we watched it basically because it's the
first occurrence of Art the Clown.
Yeah, it was like the first occurrence of Art the Clown since Terrifier is a huge thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than that. All Hallows Eve. It's like $4 to rent on Amazon Prime.
They have the coolest alien.
the swimming aliens.
Wow. Yeah, it was definitely low budget.
Right.
But it was great.
Compared to, low budget from that, just using whatever locations they can, houses, the back lot of some, it's probably state service building that they use for the gas station, obviously.
Probably.
It had to have been that, because I'm like, this gas station has no windows on it. What gas station have you gone to is just brick buildings like that. Oh, wait, buildings owned by the state. But
true.
Or around some of those that are around here near us, there's nothing around other than gas pumps, basically.
Sorry,
I was fixing my pocket. Leave me alone. She's laughing at me because I had my hands in both my front pockets of my shirt, and I was fixing them.
He had it. Well, your hands were just in there, hanging out. He's got his little fucking chicken wings.
Well, don't ask me why I did that, but anyway. It was comfortable for a moment until you ruined it. Leave me alone.
I'm sorry. It's just not every day you see somebody stick their hands in their front pockets.
But anyway, back to All Hallows Eve. Yeah, it was super cheesy. We only really wanted to watch it for the first, on-screen it. Adaptations of Art the Clown, basically, since he's now become one of our new favorites after watching all the Terrifier movies.
He's quite great.
Yep.
There's Ginger. She's saying hello to all you people.
But we did get a lot of feedback, seen a lot of comments about our last Between Two Skeletons episode between you and I for the Halloween one. And I don't know, maybe we should just start doing that for So maybe we'll just do that for the holiday episodes now.
Yeah.
Something like that, and find the questions and answer them and all that good stuff and talk about memory things, but who knows. So as this week is my episode, and it being Marine Corps birthday is on November 10th, and then November 11th is Veterans Day, which also marks the end of what? I already know Sarah doesn't know the answer.
Are you calling me stupid?
No, because I already know you don't know the answer to this.
It marks the end of November 11th. What the fuck?
It marks the end of World War I.
Okay, I knew that. I was just testing you.
Yeah, okay. She's going to test me thinking I didn't know the answer to that.
You already know I'm not a history.
I know.
Person.
I thought maybe one of these days you just might surprise me.
I will not, I promise.
I'm sure one of these days you might. You're going to look up questions, trivia fact stuff and be like, oh, this is that, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then it shocked me, basically.
We'll see.
But we are doing a brief history of G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe.
But before we do that, for November 13th, we got our On This Day. Scottish-born actor Gerard Butler was born in 1969. Butler starred in Dracula 2000, The 300, Reign of Fire, How to Train Your Dragon, and all of its sequels. In 1995, GoldenEye was released in theaters. It was the 17th Bond film in the franchise, starring Pierce Brosnan as James Bond, Judi Dench as M, and Isabelle Scorpio as Bond girl Natalia Simonova. The film grossed $356.4 million at the box office against its $60 million budget.
Damn.
In 2002, Eminem released the single Lose Yourself from the soundtrack of 8 Mile, the first rap song to win the Academy Award for Best Original Song. Dale Earnhardt Sr. won the 44th NASCAR Sprint Car Cup in 1994, making this his 7th Cup Series win. The Great Bell of Big Ben is chimed for the first time at the foot of the unfinished clock tower in 1856 outside the Palace of Westminster. Big Ben's construction would be completed in May of 1859.
Look, kids.
And there Big it is. Ben. I fucking knew it. I was waiting for it. She had this look on her face. I'm like, is she going to say it?
And I wondered why you were looking at me like that.
The look on your face told me you were wanting to say it.
It was brewing. I was like, oh, can I hold it in? Can I hold it in?
I knew you weren't going to be able to. That's why I didn't bring it up. Robert Javarek was granted the patent for the artificial heart in 1979. WWE wrestler Eddie Guerrero died in 2005 from acute heart failure in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and is buried in Scottsdale, Arizona.
What was his stage name?
That he used his own name.
Oh,
that
did
was,
he?
That was his name. He didn't have like a name like The Undertaker.
The Rock.
Yeah, he didn't have anything like that from what I can remember.
Okay.
So that's our On This Day for November 13th, 2024. So
nice.
You ready to get going?
Show is.
All right, let's go. So most guys my age, we all grew up with at least having one or two G.I. Joe figures, along with maybe Cobra. We weren't allowed to have Cobra. Mom didn't approve of the violence, so our G.I. Joes basically went on training missions and whatnot, or the enemies were whatever other 3-inch and 3/4-inch action figures we may or may not have had and whatnot. So,
Do you have any, never mind, I can't remember.
Star Wars?
No.
I can't remember. That's right.
He-Man.
No, I didn't have He-Man. I wasn't into He-Man. Like, the cartoon I was into was Brave Star, which didn't run very long, which is like a lack of a better term, like cyberpunk western kind of deal.
Okay.
You seem really surprised by that.
Cyberpunk western? In my brain, I can't put those together.
It was like a futuristic, like, world, but it was western, so I didn't know how else to put it.
Okay.
So that little action figure that sits on my desk, that's actually from Brave Star.
Oh, what was his name?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Oh.
It's a story my dad likes to talk about every once in a while, having to go chase him out of a heating vent because somebody that was very close to us decided to drop him down a vent to be an asshole when we were younger. And my dad had to go get the hospital and get stitches put in the vent back together.
Rude.
That's why my dad likes to remind me of that story. But I'm not the one that I recall dropping down the vent like that.
Right.
At least that's not how I remember it. But, you know, as Veterans Day was earlier this week, I'm sure there was quite a few people our age that were inspired to join the military due to G.I. Joe. So that's why I decided to do it this week.
Nice.
So Hasbro, the company that is who owns the rights to the G.I. Joe franchise, was originally founded by three Polish brothers, Herman, Hillel, and Henry Hassenfeld. Hasbro is a Cyrillic abbreviation of their last name and the word brothers. The first company location was in Providence, Rhode Island in 1923, selling textile remnants. Over the next 20 years, they expanded into producing pencil cases and other school supplies. They also produced modeling clay and doctors and nurse kits as their first toys. By 1942, they were primarily a toy company at this point. During World War II, they shifted their production to using more plastics for their toy making and helped produce Cluedo, or Clue as it's known here in the United States.
Like Clue the game?
Yes.
Okay.
They also made makeup kits for girls after one of the brothers saw his four-year-old daughter playing with a piece of candy like it was a stick of lipstick.
Aw.
They also helped rescue and employ Jews from Umlauf, Poland during the war years. In 1952, Hasbro introduced one of the most classic toys of all time, Mr. Potato Head. Mr. Potato Head would also be the very first toy ever advertised on television. And this is Mr. Potato Head when you actually used a real potato.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm. The original Mr. Potato Head, you use an actual potato.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the Mr. Potato Head we know with all the hands and the feet.
The actual
body parts you potato. Literally stuck into a potato.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Interesting.
In 1954, they secured the licensing rights to make Disney toys.
Okay.
So, yeah. So back, that's back when Disney first started every, you know, popping up big time. So yeah. That's when they started really printing money, basically. By the 1960s, Hasbro would be making $12 million, and 3 years later, they would soon start printing their money even more with their rights to G.I. Joe. With Westerns and World War II movies being shown on television in the 1960s, patriotism was an all-time high because World War II was only like 18 years ago in the early 1960s. Stanley Weston saw the potential market with dolls for boys after the success of Barbie for girls in the 1950s made by Mattel. He would first originally make cardboard cutouts for his presentation to pitch the idea of a soldier doll for boys with interchangeable outfits and accessories just like Barbie, but the Hasbro president Merrill Lloyd shut the idea down and said, no, we don't make dolls. They were making like paint-by-number sets, mm-hmm. like the wood cutout jigsaw puzzles, and you know, they were licensed with Disney and whatnot. I tried to find a list of the most popular Hasbro toys, Mr. Potato Head is the only thing that shows up other than G.I. Joe. I trade most popular Hasbro toys, 1940s to 1950, 1950s to 1960s, and Mr. Potato Head is the only thing that would come up.
So maybe that's just their overall best seller.
Right, it is. And that's basically one of the videos I watched for this was the episode, the toys that made us on Netflix for, mm-hmm. you know, research on this. And that was like, what they even pointed out was like Mr. Potato Head was like their biggest thing. Like in 1963, they kind of did have a flop since they did have Disney licensing rights. They had a flop with Flubber because it was causing skin irritations and sore throats because of the material that it was made out of. It's almost kind of like a short episode combined thing, the story behind Flubber. So that's mm-hmm. I'm not trying to go into it because it was like an urban legend thing and what they did with the rest of it.
Oh.
But then it was actually confirmed by Hasbro employees. Yeah, it's buried under a fucking parking lot. That's where it is. The remaining.
Okay.
But not to give away too many more details on that because it is. I saw that and I was like, that seems interesting enough for an episode. Well, hold on that. But the head of research and design of Hasbro, Don Levine, was also a veteran in the Army, and he was also in that meeting. And he knew what it would take to get Merrill excited to make G.I. Joe. So he saw the potential in G.I. Joe mm-hmm. at this point. But at this point, G.I. Joe didn't have a name yet. So the one thing that would actually get Merrill excited about this was that they would make the doll posable and articulated joints. And how Don ended up doing this was is he was walking by an artist supply store and saw the artists and mannequins in the front window. And that's where mm-hmm. he got this idea from.
And that would be a leg up over Barbie because mm-hmm. you can't, yeah. I mean, you can bend her at, you know, the hip, the shoulder.
Right.
But you can't bend her anywhere else.
Yep. So Don would end up buying half a dozen of these artist mannequins and turn to his team and tell them to make them into fighting soldiers. His team reminded him that Merrill said no, he wasn't interested. Don didn't take no for an answer, and he reminded them that Merrill was gone on vacation and nobody needs to know about this. So just like the many secret missions us guys put G.I. Joe on, they spent 2 weeks working on prototypes. And they also said that the National Guard Armory about 2 miles away would actually bring in actual military weapons for the toy makers to model the prototypes on.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, so this being in the 1960s, they said that the general of the armory loaded M16s, M4s, and bazookas into his car and brought them to Hasbro. You try and do that now, you only have one place you're going, and that's the stockade and then the federal penitentiary because you would be considered probably a domestic terrorist by doing something like this now.
Yeah.
Don was able to change Merrill's mind after he revealed the prototypes to him after he's returned from his vacation. And Merrill Lloyd had told Don to get Stan Weston back up here to Hasbro to make a deal. If Stan had knew how big G.I. Joe would have become, he probably wouldn't have taken the $100,000 complete buyout that he was offered compared to his other offer of $50,000 and a 1% of the royalties of G.I. Joe. And his son that said in the Netflix documentary, The Toys That Made Us, his father estimated he would have made somewhere between $30 to $40 million if he would have taken that 1% royalty.
Damn. He missed out. Mm-hmm.
Hasbro knew that they had to cover more than just the Army to keep competitors coming in and copying their doll. They also created a doll for the Navy, the Marines, and the Air Force. Creating G.I. Joe was a huge gamble for Hasbro because it could potentially bankrupt them. But this being the 1960s, boys wouldn't want to play with dolls. And even Don Levine's own son told him he would rather go play flag football instead of playing with dolls. This is where the term action figure was coined, was by Hasbro. They came up with this term, and they were forcing their employees to not say doll, but action figure when referring to G.I. Joe, and they would be fined if they said doll.
Seriously?
Instead of action figure. Yeah, they were serious about this to make sure that you do not call G.I. Joe a doll. And before, and where the name G.I. Joe came from was a Gomer Pyle movie that one of the staff was watching the night before where they didn't have a name yet.
Okay.
It was just referred to it, basically. It was referred to it or the action figure until they were watching this movie. It was like, why don't we call him G.I. Joe? And just like Barbie over at Mattel, Hasbro had to release accessories for G.I. Joe for all of his missions. Some of the original lineup sets includes uniforms and equipment for each branch. Flamethrower for the Marines, scuba gear for Navy, a flight suit and a life rescue raft for the Air Force. And of course, he had his tents, sandbags, machine guns, barbed wire, stuff like that.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe sold for about $4 in 1964 when he was finally released. And that would come out to be about $40 today in 2024.
Wow.
And like Barbie and her pink Corvette, G.I. Joe had his Jeep, which was around $15, and that would be about $150 today. You know, those high prices, parents did notice the quality of G.I. Joe and his accessories being made from cloth and actual buttons. Parents could feel and see the durability and would find it easier for them to invest into G.I. Joe for their sons.
Okay. Makes sense.
And so when other companies saw the success with Hasbro and G.I. Joe when they started copying them, one of the things that they did was the older 12-inch, the ones from the 60s to the 70s, mm-hmm. was they had that scar that's on the face mm-hmm. on the right side of every G.I. Joe other than to make him look tougher. But one company called Amigo, I think I might have misspelled it here in my notes because Amigo doesn't sound right to me. They literally copied everything down to a T with G.I. Joe. But they removed the scar and they thought they were safe. Well, there was one thing Hasbro realized they did in mid-production. They just left it. Like, even one of the higher executives of this company said, yeah, we changed the face and we copied the entire body. And how they got caught was one of the thumbs, the thumbnail was printed on the bottom side where your head would be. And they just kind of left it to see. It's like, yeah, you guys copied our design, basically. And they're like, and wow. That's how they knew they got caught.
Because, so they did it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't intentional, but they left it.
Right.
But they left it knowing that's how they could tell somebody was copying their design. And as G.I. Joe goes from the 1960s into the 1970s with the, you know, the changes with counterculture and Vietnam, they knew G.I. Joe had to go through some changes too. So going from America's Movable Fighting Man to the Adventures of G.I. Joe, this would bring on the adventure team for Joe and new innovations to the toy. One of the things that the 1970s brought to G.I. Joe was having flocked hair on his face and his beard and marketed as lifelike hair. They also did still sell a clean-shaven version of G.I. Joe if you didn't want G.I. Joe to have a beard. In 1974, this would be introduced to the famous Kung Fu grip that G.I. Joe has with a softer, you know, manufactured hand.
Yeah.
Because of the popularity of the Kung Fu movies in the mid-1970s, this is where the term Kung Fu grip came from. And this innovation would also be used in the counterpart Action Man made in for the United Kingdom versions. In 1976, brought along the Eagle Eye Vision to make it as if G.I. Joe was looking around, even though it was only from left to right.
So the eyes actually moved?
Yep. There's a little lever in the back of his head, and the kids could move, and his eyes would move back and forth, left and right, like he was...
Did you have one like that?
No. The ones we had were the 3 3/4-inch tall ones. And G.I. Joe would also go from fighting against enemy soldiers like Russia, Japan, stuff like that, you mm-hmm. know, that the boys knew from war movies and from all the World War II movies and anything about the Korean War. And he would go on to fighting the intruders, strongmen from another planet, giant octopuses, white tigers, depending on what play set it was that he bought, you know, you got. Because the 1970s action team, it was like basically, for the best way I could put it, it's like Barbie being a pilot, Barbie being a chef. So like the Adventures of G.I. Joe brought this to like he was a fireman or mm-hmm. he was hunting tigers or going for treasure and all different things to keep G.I. Joe running.
Yeah.
Because of everybody trying to get away from about the horrors of war, basically.
Yeah.
Even with the oil crisis, it would make it even more expensive to produce G.I. Joe and the sales that would start to decline. So they had to go from, G.I. Joe became with a more hollow body during the oil crisis. It was less articulated. And then towards the end of the 1970s, with the sales declining, G.I. Joe would come to an end after 14 years.
Dang.
Hasbro would almost go bankrupt, but was survived by relying on their older lines and a new innovation of a board game called Hungry Hungry Hippo.
Yep.
Going from the 1970s and the 1980s, a new war, you know, the United States faced a new war, that being the Cold War with the Soviet, you know, the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
This would also bring on a new wave of patriotism with the scare of the Red Threat. In 1982 is when the 3-inch and 3/4-inch tall action figures would be introduced and to compete with Star Wars figures of the same size. But as big as Star Wars was, they knew they had a tall order to fill. So in the 1980s, G.I. Joe would go from it being his name to the name of the unit that G.I. Joe is now a part of. And all the characters now would have a code name.
Okay.
Some of the code names would be like Duke, Scarlet, Shipwreck, Barbecue, Snake Eyes.
Barbecue?
Yep.
Okay.
Barbecue had a flamethrower.
Fitting.
And there was one called Airtight, and he was supposed to be like a hazardous environment specialist and whatnot. Cobra would be the enemy of G.I. Joe in the 1980s and from to present day, basically. And they would also have code names as well, too. Cobra was supposed to be a terrorist organization.
Okay.
You can actually, when I was looking into this, you can see a full list of every G.I. Joe ever made at histank.com with pictures and their backstories if you need a dose of nostalgia.
They have backstories?
Every single one of them has a backstory, like a town where he's from, a little blurb about their mm-hmm. life and how they became a G.I. Joe and everything.
Huh.
But what made the 1980s G.I. Joe so popular was this would be the very first time they had an actual real enemy, the terrorist organization Cobra. Also, the toys weren't what was advertised. And this is also where Hasbro goes a different route about advertising G.I. Joe.
Okay.
G.I. Joe, the toy, was not advertised.
Ever?
It wasn't at first. Because at that time, there was a regulation for television commercials for toys can only have 7 seconds of animation and special effects for toys. But there was no regulations on books.
Oh.
So Hasbro would team up with Marvel Comic Books and create a G.I. Joe comic book, and they would advertise that instead on television.
Okay.
The first year that the new G.I. Joe launch was made, they made $51 million, and it doubled in their second year. The current CEO of Hasbro at this time, his father was Merrill Lloyd. And so when he was the new G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, which was the line in the 80s to the mid-1990s,
mm-hmm.
when it got launched and he heard the jingle, he told them, I'm going to go speak to my father. And they're just like, his father's dead. And then they realized it's like, he's going to go tell his father that G.I. Joe's back.
Aw.
And that's how he made his decision. Because they said the executives that were in that meeting, that pitch meeting, he said he just sat there silently for, they don't know how long, it seemed like an eternity. He just said, I'm going to go talk to my father, and got up and left. And that's when they finally made the realization that, like, he's on board with it.
Okay.
Even with the comic book out there advertising the comic book for the toys, the toy ended up becoming so popular, they would actually start making even more vehicles and an animated series. Because then they knew they could draw more kids in, because now they can see their favorite G.I. Joe vehicles on the cartoon. They'd be like, I have that vehicle and whatnot.
Yeah.
One of the first G.I. Joe vehicles was like a tank. They made about 400,000 of them.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. Okay.
And it was estimated that by 1989, G.I. Joe would make Hasbro over $1 billion, and every 5 and 11 kids would have at least one G.I. Joe action figure. But unfortunately, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, and its comic book would come to an end in 1994 after Kenner was bought out by Hasbro and Star Wars became its main focus.
Oh.
But that's just a little brief history on the G.I. Joe, but I remember they always, it goes away, is come back. Like, mm-hmm. I looked into it currently, like, they're currently doing, from, like, 2020 to present, they're doing a retro line of the 3-inch and 3/4 G.I. Joes right now. And it looks like a lot of the original packaging. I remember in the mid-1990s when they did the 30th, 40th anniversary, they did a 12-inch one, and it was off of Duke, which is supposed to be, like, the commanding officer of the G.I. Joe unit, but this was the middle of the desert, you know, Gulf War. Mm-hmm. So they put him in the current U.S. desert camo with whatnot, and an M16 had a little button on it that would light up on the end, because G.I. Joe in the comic book would actually kill people.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the thing, but on television, you can't have death, so they were using lasers, and they always... And Cobra always escaped from certain death, basically, like the Cobra commander, like, and if I remember correctly, in the opening shots, he'd be like, his command helicopter would get shot, and he'd jump out and pull a parachute, so he always would get away, basically, and Cobra would always be like, really terrible shots with lasers.
But thank God cartoons are realistic.
Right. But from the comic book, like, you can see in images where they're literally shooting people and whatnot, which... Huh. It's weird now, different regulations like that.
Yeah.
There isn't really a whole lot of fun facts I can come up with for this. Snake Eyes, he's actually one of the most popular G.I. Joes.
Why?
Because he's an all black. And the funny thing is, he was made all black to cut costs to keep the production line running. And he's become one of the most popular because he's like a ninja in all black.
Oh, okay.
And the largest G.I. Joe action figure vehicle ever made was the USS Flag, which is at 7 feet and 6 inches in length.
Did they ever make them in Power Wheels?
I don't recall. There probably was, like, G.I. Joe branded Power Wheels of some sort. But, yeah, the U.S. Flag was scaled to be able to be used with the action figures correct to scale. That's why it was so big.
Gotcha.
And U.S. flags, like, go for thousands of dollars now in their boxes, original boxes.
Jeez.
And there was one place I saw, it just popped across my news feed one time, and it was, like, a U.S. flag still in its brand new in the box, still in the shipping box from Hasbro, and I think it was, like, somewhere between $3,000 to $5,000 it was going for.
Holy shit.
And it's like, you guys are just putting that on a display for a brag.
Probably.
Yeah.
Not many other people can do that, though.
Right, they have it still in its original shipping box of the sorts.
Yeah, that's crazy. That was a good little rundown on the G.I. Joes.
And a little super short episode this week, guys. I'm sorry, it was my birthday weekend. And
he just wanted to stay home and party by himself.
But I didn't want to cancel an episode, but I also wanted to make sure I wanted to bring you guys something and not repost something.
Yeah.
Give you something brand new. Just a little quick hitter this week, I guess.
Brand new. It was a good episode.
Thanks.
I wasn't a G.I. Joe kid.
Right. Well, obviously you weren't.
What? Girls could play with G.I. Joes?
I know, but yeah, I remember in times we grew up, it's like, girls don't play with G.I. Joes here. Here's this Barbie doll instead.
I did love me some Barbies.
Right. Even though, G.I. Joe would kick Ken's ass.
Probably. But I'm sure Barbie would kick G.I. Joe's ass.
He might be Ken enough, but not against G.I. Joe. He's not. But on that note, I think it's time we get out of the Emporium for the day, Sarah. What do you think?
I agree.
So until next time.
Remember to creep it real.
And stay spooky.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.